This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so excited to talk to my first guest today. This is amazing. I just love his book, and well, people, you haven't heard his name often enough, but he is the star behind the star. Vincent Patterson, the name of his book is Icons and Instincts, Choreographing and Directing Entertainment's Biggest Stars. You know, in the film business, the most underrated people are the writers and the choreographers. So I am so happy to welcome you, Vincent. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much, and thanks for inviting me to be on your show. I really appreciate it. You know, I have a lot of relatives in your area.
Oh.
Two of my brothers live right down near you, one in Clearwater and one in Land Lake, so it's great.
My goodness. Well, I'm right here in Clearwater, and of course, I had you scheduled before, but we had to cancel because we had that hurricane coming our way.
I know. Everything okay with you?
Yeah, well, you know, it didn't come to Clearwater. We all prepared for a week and canceled our shows and everything, and it didn't come here. Of course, it hit the south part of the state so badly. I was disappointed I didn't get to talk to you then. I'm so happy I was able to find a spot for you because this book is so much fun. Icons and Instincts.
Thanks.
Oh, you are amazing.
Thank you.
You know.
Oh, thank you, Patsy.
You know, the thing is, I was in Hollywood for a few years, and as I said in the beginning, writers don't get the respect they deserve, and definitely the choreographers don't, because, you know, you are what make films so great. When I think of all of the wonderful movies that I love, they all involve choreography.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's incredible. Yeah, you're absolutely true. We've kind of been the overlooked children of the industry, and hopefully that's going to change. We've a lot of important choreographers on the West Coast, especially, are bonding together to create a guild for the first time, so that we do get a little bit more of the appreciation that happens out there for all the hard work that we do. So thank you for that.
Well, I didn't realize you didn't have a guild because, I mean, what would Hollywood have been without all of you people? I mean, you all did such wonderful work. And, you know, we even, like, you know, Fred Astaire, people think he did all the choreography. You know, they don't give the respect to the really great people that do all this hard work, because it is not an easy thing what you do.
It isn't an easy thing, but it can be a great amount of fun. That's the truth.
Well,
and dancing always brings joy to everybody. So that's the wonderful thing about being in this business. But yes, we are overlooked. It's so true. All the way back to Fred Astaire's choreographer, who was Hermes Pan. Very few people know his name, but he was the one who created all of that work for Fred Astaire. Amazing, you know.
It is. When you look at it, those are the films that I love the most. I love the musicals, the old musicals. I will watch them over and over. And of course, you had an early start, well, a fairly early start in the business. And now, of course, I know that you were an actor and you've been in many, you know, sometimes behind the scenes, sometimes on screen. Tell us how this all started, because it's an exciting life you've had and everybody that you've known.
Oh, my gosh. It has been exciting. But I didn't know that at the beginning. I mean, I grew up kind of outside of Philadelphia along the Delaware River. There wasn't a lot of culture. I never even thought about dancing. I had fun being an actor in junior high school and high school, but that was about it. And it really wasn't until after I graduated from college in central Pennsylvania, and I moved to Tucson, Arizona, I was almost 24, and I passed a dance school one day, and I heard the music, and I went in and started taking some dance classes, and it changed my life in many, many ways. Career-wise, it was nothing ever I had ever anticipated becoming, and also just physically, the fact of dancing and being an athlete was so exciting for me. So that's kind of what I did. I studied for a few years in Tucson and put myself on the line and said, I'm going to move to Hollywood and see if I can make it. And Patsy, I had an incredible, incredible career dancing with amazing people and choreographing them afterwards as well. So,
well,
yeah.
We are very lucky. We are all very lucky that you did not pursue what you had originally thought of doing, becoming a lawyer. We did not need another lawyer. The only lawyer on film that I like is Richard Gere in Chicago. Now that would have been
Well, I thought it would be good because I grew up relatively poor, and I thought, you know, if I'm a lawyer, I could be really successful as a trial lawyer because I love being an actor and I could make some great money. That was my original intention. But, you know, that wasn't the path that the fate had set out for me.
Well,
you know,
thank goodness.
Me in another direction.
Thank goodness. We don't need another lawyer. Although it would have been funny to see you in court if you started dancing like Richard Gere. No.
Exactly.
You have to admit, for a dancing scene, that's a pretty good scene, right? I know.
Absolutely.
I was surprised he could dance, and I that's still my favorite movie of his because I love that.
Oh, yeah.
And isn't it that true? The dancing made the movie. And just like with everything that you've done, you have created such memorable scenes in film and on stage. It's so exciting. Just, you know, you just have to tell my listeners. I mean, I wish, you know, you were here. I wish I could just see you because you have done work with so many people. Well, we start, of course, with Madonna. Everybody knows that you've worked with Madonna and Michael Jackson. But tell us a little bit about them. But then I want to talk about some of the other ones. One of them, of course, is Debbie Reynolds. I wrote a film for her.
You did? Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, I'll tell you a little bit about Michael and Madonna. They were both great to work with. And, you know, what was so fortunate for me and also for my work was that I got to work with them when MTV was in its heyday and millions and millions and millions of people would wait for the next video to show up and have parties and everything. And so my work got all of that exposure. And that was so fortunate for me. Michael Jackson was such a wonderful person to work with. One of the sweetest people I've ever met in my life. Madonna was a little tougher, but, you know, just as hard a worker. And it was wonderful. They were so collaborative, so exciting, so inspiring. I got to do so much stuff and create images that people still remember. I mean, Michael Jackson in that lean from Smooth Criminal, people, you see that and everybody goes, oh, I remember that. Or, you know, Madonna doing Vogue. We changed a lot of dance history. And I'm so grateful for having those wonderful experiences with both of them.
Well, of course, Michael Jackson was so talented. Tell us about the lean, because that everything that you did was, you've done things that really people will remember forever.
Yeah, it's so funny. Well, I knew Michael liked crazy imagery like that, and I wanted to come up with some funny stuff when he asked me to put together and conceive the video for him, Smooth Criminal. So two of the really fun images I came up with, if people remember, the first one was when he walks into the club and he takes a coin out of his pocket and he flips it across the room and everybody watches and it lands in the jukebox and the music starts. That was the first one. And then I had this crazy idea of him and the guys that were surrounding him at the moment doing this lean that almost took them to the floor and back. Now, Patsy, I'm not going to disclose how I did it. People have to read the book because that's a spoiler. But I will say this, though. It was not cleats in the floor. There were no shoe tricks attached. So, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't.
I will say that.
You didn't nail, or you didn't nail them down.
No, their shoes were not nailed to the floor.
But it was clever and memorable. And it is, I mean, for you, you know, I think it's exciting that you know that forever, you know, 100 years from now, people will still be looking at your work and just admiring what you came out with. And in some ways, sometimes it was a little bit risque. Let's talk a little bit about Madonna without getting too graphic about this. But, I mean, it did a lot for her, let's put it that way.
It did. You know, when I got to do the Blonde Ambition tour, especially for Madonna, it was right at that time. People don't remember it because she's such a huge superstar now. But there were a lot of female singers who were kind of at the same place. Madonna, Paula Abdul, Janet Jackson. And when we did the Blonde Ambition tour, she just wanted me to be as insane and crazy and fun as I possibly could be. And you know, so I like doing these things that are sensual. I have to say, though, that I always added a little bit of humor to them. So I tried to never make them offensive, you know, but, you know, her rolling around on a bed with two guys with cone bras, that was pretty daring at the time. And people were going to come in and arrest her for doing it. And the Pope declared that I had released Satan back into the world. I kind of felt a little bad about that, but I also had a big smile on my face, so...
I mean, did he really do? I always wasn't sure if that was a real.
Real.
That was
a real
really,
quote. Oh, yes. Yes. He said with the Blonde Ambition Tour was the name of the tour. And he said with the Blonde Ambition Tour, Satan has been re-released into the world. And I thought, well, that's pretty powerful.
Well, you know, I had seen the quote, you know, over the years. And I thought, well, I thought you guys made it up to tell you the truth. Because
no.
I was wondering, what in the heck is he watching that? Why is he watching it in the first place? Can you tell me that?
That's very funny. Oh, my gosh. I never thought about it that way. I love that.
I mean, who brought that to him? I mean, was he sitting around one day in the Vatican and they said, oh, by the way, we want to show you this and get your... I mean, I wouldn't dare show something like that to the Pope. I want to know...
Neither would I, but... Maybe he was taking some Vogue instructions or something like that, some Vogue dance classes or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, I would think that the popes would have better things to do, like study Latin or something. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you.
So she was... I can see that she was a prima donna. I mean, she's a prima donna. But give us just one little snippet of something that she said
I'll tell you a fun little thing. So, you know, she was so wonderful to work with. She really was. She was so much fun. Unlike Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson, if he hired you, he trusted you, and whatever you gave him, he might have a little comment about, let's change this and put it on another accent or something. But everything with Madonna was, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? I'm not sure. Why are we doing this? And so when I created this piece for her, where she was dressed up like Marie Antoinette, and everybody was in the court, and it was for an MTV presentation. We were working down at the dance studio down the street from me, and all of a sudden it was an earthquake. And I grabbed her, and we ran under the door frame and just held each other, and it stopped shaking, and we kind of looked at each other, and we looked at each other, and she said, I think we should get back to work. Let's get back to work. So it was a funny, funny moment for me, standing there hugging Madonna just to save her from an earthquake.
Oh, I love that. I love the Marie Antoinette one. I thought that was so beautiful and so clever. When she came out, it really took my breath away. I thought, wow, this is amazing.
Oh, well, you know, she had asked me to do that for her, and I had already created two different versions of Vogue, one for the video, one for the tour, and I thought, I don't know if I can do another one. And I had these crazy fans, and I had wanted to play around with them, and I went down to a studio, and I called her up, and I said, okay, I got a great idea, you know, but you as Marie Antoinette, because if you remember, she was always coming up with a new image. Every week, she was presenting herself as a different hair color, a different hair style, a different look. And so she came down. She said, I'm not so sure about that. But she came down and started to play and absolutely fell in love with the idea. And it's so funny when we think about it, this word iconic gets thrown around all the time. But that piece was kind of iconic before we even had social media and we really knew what iconic was, you know. Oh, boy.
Now,
fun time.
When you come out with a dance, or when you did you like work with her first? Did you show her what you wanted her to do? How exactly did it work with you?
Well, I basically put it together myself, or I go in with an assistant, and then I'll create the movement and put it on the assistant so I can step back and see what it looks like. And then Madonna would come in and learn everything. And, you know, if there were some things that I created that I didn't think looked as good on her, I would change them and make her look her best. And, yeah, that's how it worked. And then she would come in with the dancers, and I would teach them all, and we would rehearse.
A lot of rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me, during rehearsal, did she eat or drink anything? I mean, what was rehearsal like with her? Did you socialize?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. It was, you know, well, especially, it was always fun. It was always like a family, and we always had such a great time. No, she was, she was always worried about that. Not worried, I mean, in a positive way, concerned about her body and her weight and all of that, and worked out. She was so diligent doing that. No, she pretty much drank water all the time when we were working because we all sweat so much and had to put that back into our systems. But she was a hard worker and still is, from what I understand. I haven't worked with her for a bit, but I heard that she's still as hard a worker as she was with me. So that's a great thing to know.
Well, it is, because, of course, this is what people, when you're watching a film and it looks so smooth, the dancing is so lovely, and, you know, you think, oh, wow, gee, that's easy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's when you realize that choreographers deserve Oscars.
Oh, please. I'm having a conversation with the people from the Academy in a couple weeks and talking about this because I'm part of the Academy, but there's so many choreographers who aren't, who deserve to be. You know, Mandy Moore for La La Land, just to mention one, and also Justin Peck for the last West Side Story. I mean, choreographers bring so much to the table and so much to film, and people love watching dance on film. They just do. So absolutely, Patsy, I'm so thankful for your support of this. We're beginning to create something called the CG, the Choreographers Guild, out here to cover choreographers on the West Coast, because Broadway has their own union and it's very successful. But we have nothing out here for us, as you mentioned earlier, and we're going to change that.
Well,
we're
that's really good. And they have to award it during the main Academy Award ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
Not this nonsense of
giving it prime time.
I hate that. Right. I think that's miserable. There's no reason. I don't care. You can make it 3 hours if you just are so, you know, the people who are in the background of a film are so important. And I think it's terrible what they've done, cutting it down for people. I love the entire thing. And, you know, sort of the writers nowadays aren't so important. It's surprising that they even recognize the writers. And like a recent movie that was just released where God knows a good writer could have done something with it, but they have no respect for the writers, and they have no respect, because I did a little bit of writing out there in Hollywood, and three of my films went into Turnaround. Unfortunately, on Turnaround.
Oh.
So, maybe if I had added dancing to my script, maybe they would have hired I would have gotten to meet you, and they wouldn't have. There would be a different kind of turnaround. So, you know, they have no respect for writers and they have no respect for choreographers. And you do the best, most marvelous work. You know, I know I could talk to you for hours. And I probably what I'll do is have you back. But what I'd like to do is just sort of throw a few names at you. I'm not sure if, you know, that just a few things. Now, did you work with Dick Van Dyke?
I did work. My first TV show that I ever got to do, I was about to give up dancing And I was going to take my last dance class, and a choreographer called me from that dance class, and he said, I'm looking for a guy, and I've been given your name. Can I come watch you in class? And he did, thank heavens, gave me my first job in TV, and it was dancing on a special CBS On the Air with Dick Van Dyke. And both Dick Van Dyke was such a sweetheart, such a nice, nice man. Oh, my God. Yes, I did.
I love him. He's one of my absolute favorites. Now,
what a gentleman.
What about Mel Brooks? What did you do with Mel Brooks?
Mel Brooks. Oh, Mel Brooks was hysterical. Mel Brooks did this crazy, crazy, crazy music video called To Be or Not to Be, where he played kind of like a Hitler character doing a rap. And I was one of three guys who played sort of Nazi soldiers dancing among these three beautiful girls. It was an insane, insane video. And it's still available. People can turn, you know, go to YouTube and watch it.
Oh, it's
To Be
wonderful.
Or Not to Be.
Well, I didn't know you were in
it. Very
funny. Now I'm going to watch it again because I love it. I love it. I love the film. And then Bob Mackie. What about Bob Mackie? Did you?
Oh, I was so fortunate as a dancer to wear Bob Mackie's clothes. I mean, you know, especially when you did the Academy Awards, Bob Mackie was always there. But, you know, at that time, back in the 80s, in the early 80s especially, there were every wonderful female television star had her own TV special where she sang and danced. So I got to work with Linda Carter, Cheryl Ladd. But Linda Carter always had Bob Mackie design the clothing. And what a nice guy Bob was. Oh, my gosh, such a sweetheart. And made you feel like $1 million when he dressed you, always. Whether you were a dancer or the star, if you were the dancer, you felt like the star. He made you feel so good.
And John Travolta?
John Travolta, oh, my gosh. I did a film with John Travolta that kind of, I would say, almost went into turnaround. But on that film, he met his wife, Kelly Preston, and I choreographed a piece for the two of them. They had not worked together before, and this piece was a crazy, funny pas de deux duet for them, and they wound up falling in love on that movie. And so that was so exciting to be part of that. Yeah, it was great.
Now,
was
have you ever worked with an actor who was really, really not good at dancing, really, really bad, and you had to whip them in shape?
Well, you know, what I tried to do, I believe everybody can move. I believe everybody can dance. And I'm grateful for the perception as a choreographer to be able to watch somebody's body movement and find something that works for them. So I can't really say that I've had people who couldn't move at all, because I always tried to find a way to do something that came out of their body that looked comfortable, that even though it might have not been a kind of dance that could compete with, say, Michael Jackson, at least they looked like they were capable of moving. So that's the way I've always tried to work, to find the best movement that can happen for a specific celebrity or individual and make them look their best. That's the trick of it all.
Well, I am personally responsible for turning a choreographer's hair gray. I was my boys and my husband were in a production of Fiddler on the Roof, and they needed an extra girl in the chorus, you know, the villagers. And for some reason, the producer, he said, well, since your kids are already in it and your husband's in this Fiddler on the Roof, you should be in it. And so he, without asking the choreographer,
oh God,
he put me in it. Now, I'll tell you something. I had never been on stage. I was the shyest person you ever knew. This was before I had the radio program. I was like, really? So shy.
Oh, my gosh.
And I have to get on with the village. The choreographer, a very talented choreographer. I mean, he really, I think his hair turned gray during that production. I will tell you, I was not, all of the girls were professionals. I mean, they were really professionals. Here in Little Theater, here in St. Petersburg, a really professional production. And then I'm in it. But I will tell you, I was the most enthusiastic villager on stage. And I think I did hog some scenes because I loved it. I mean, looking back on it, if I could have started years ago dancing, I would have done it. I love being on stage.
Oh, it feels so good, doesn't it, when you're doing something that you love and you're enjoying it and the audience is enthused and, you know, just loving your performances. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
I didn't care if I stood out. I loved it. I would have.
Good for you.
This is, that's the fun of it. And I love when, I love little theater, and I hope more, I hope now people can get back together and do more little theater. There's so much to be learned about cooperation, about art, about just pure joy of being in the theater and of dancing.
Absolutely. And now that the pandemic is slowly fading away, hopefully, and, you know, things are moving forward, it's time to get back into the theater. It's time to, you know, get back and enjoy it as a collective audience. And there's so much good work out there right now and wonderful, wonderful things. We just saw a great piece called Jagged Little Pill the other day, and it was a very exciting thing based on Alanis Morissette's music. Wonderful piece, wonderful. Great choreography, too.
Well, Vincent Patterson, I think you are amazing. You have a nice website. I want people to go there and check you out. There's all about your biography, your choreography, interviews, photos, lots of photos. And the name of the book is called Icons and Instincts. Choreographing and directing entertainment's biggest stars, and you have worked with everybody, and I love it. Icons and Instincts, just look for that book. It's available online, and I hope in bookstores now that they're opening again. Vincent, I think you are amazing, and it has been a pure joy to talk to you.
Oh, Patsy, I'm so honored to have this conversation. I hope I get to meet you in person sometime. You sound like such a great, fun person. We need to sit down sometime. If I ever get down to Florida, I'm going to let you know.
Absolutely. If you come visit your brother, you should come visit your brother. And you can come here in the studio, and we can have a whole hour, okay?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Patsy. Have a beautiful, beautiful day.
And you too. Bye-bye now, Vincent. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to do commercials, and then we'll be right back with Rosie Brown.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and this is so exciting. Roseanne Brown has written a book for Rick Riordan Presents. It's called Serwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting. And this is book number one in what I'm sure is going to be a very successful series. Hi, Rosie.
Hey, good morning, Patsy.
Oh, wow. This is so exciting. I am so happy to talk to you. Because this book starts off with fireflies. And when I was a kid, I used to chase fireflies like crazy. So it's really exciting to have you on the program. And, of course, it's a Rick Riordan book. And I'm holding it up right now to the camera. I'm also on YouTube here, so I can hold it up. What a beautiful cover they've done for you, Rosie.
Thank you so much. No, the cover was done by Alcarna. He's a Ghanaian artist. And, like, as a Ghanaian myself, like, getting to work with someone who knew the culture and all the symbols and, the what everything meant was just so amazing. He knocked out of the park.
Wow. He is an amazing illustrator. It is beautiful. I hope that he's done a big, big poster for you and that you have it hanging up over your desk to inspire you forever, because it is beautiful.
Well, that's a good idea. I have not done that with actually any of my book covers, so I should do that.
Oh, my goodness. I will tell you something. I bet you could make money. You know, you always want to make a little bit of extra money. they really should do a poster of this. Kids would love this. I think it's cool.
Well, I'll definitely pass on to the team, because, yeah.
Well, you know, Rick always has ideas of how to do marketing, so that's another idea. And, of course, you mentioned that you're from Ghana, and it's, of course, you came to America, which is a little bit different. I don't remember, what age were you when you got here?
I was, like, around 3 or 4, so I was pretty young.
Okay. Have you been back to Ghana since?
Yeah, I visited a couple times for, like, weddings, funerals, like, you know, big family engagements, because most of my extended family is still there.
Okay. Well, you know, the idea here, now you came out with this idea for, and I'm pronouncing it right, Serwa?
Yes.
Serwa. Okay. So tell us about your main character and tell us about, I really got a kick out of this firefly idea. Was this an original idea with you, or did it, how did you come out with this idea?
Sure. So a little bit about Serwa. So Serwa is a 12-year-old Ghanaian immigrant, and she has grown up in this society of vampire hunters. Like, her parents are hunters, her grandparents were. Like, it's a long, long family tradition. And the vampires in this world they're called Aje, which are a creature from Ghanaian folklore, which, like you mentioned, instead of turning into bats, they turn into fireflies. And also, the thing that makes the Aje unique is that they can take over a person's mind. So anyone you know could be possessed by one, and you would never know. But when you're possessed, you're turned into a vampire. So, like, your best friend, your spouse, your children could be vampires. You would never know. So Serwa has trained her whole life with her family to defeat these creatures. However, when a hunt goes horribly wrong, her parents are like, this is not safe. You cannot do this anymore. So they retire her, and they dump her with some non-magic relatives in Maryland, where she has to face her toughest battle yet. Middle school.
Oh, boy.
I don't know about you, Patsy, but middle school was horrible for me.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I hated it. And I want to mention home ec. Home ec classes. You mentioned it in the book. And that was my worst class. I hated that. And I really, I would have loved to have seen that classroom. let's just say people have to read the book, because when I got to that part, it brought back horrible memories. That's all, you know, I aced Latin, but I could never ace home ec. It was such a torture for me.
That is so interesting, because I loved home ec because, like, it has food, so I was there. But PE was the one that got me. I was horrible at PE.
Well, the only time I got a D was from my PE class because I had to play baseball, and I refused to throw the ball underhanded. I threw like a guy, and she gave me a D. She didn't like me. So I appreciate this whole story about middle school, because middle school is tough.
You know that's right. Yes, and it was really important to me, too, to, like, really show, like, the kind of the fish-out-of-water story. Like, yeah, she's a fish-out-of-water. Like, she's a warrior trained to be a fighter, and now she's in this, like, regular school. But also sort of my drawing on my experience as an immigrant, like, coming from one culture to another. Because even though I was young, I remembered the big shift and coming here and not speaking the language. And so kind of that exploration of what you do when you're thrust out of a world you know into a new one, and you just have to adapt.
Now, what happens in school? I mean, here she is. She's got to do all the things, schoolgirl things. And then somebody invades her school. Explain this situation.
Of course. So her parents, they dropped her off there because they wanted her to be safe. They didn't want her to be involved with the vampire, the family business anymore, the vampire hunting. However, it turns out they actually missed one vampire in the town, and her parents have already gone. Like, she can't contact them anymore until their mission's done. So she's on her own. And so she finds this vampire, and she realizes, oh, no, I cannot do this by myself. So she has to recruit some friends to help her fight it. However, her friends have no magic training. They have no battle training. So the book is also about her having to learn how to train these regular kids into this lean, mean vampire fighting team.
She has to whip them into action, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's very Avengers style, but like if the Avengers were a bunch of 12-year-old kids.
Well, you have so much fun with this. So let's step back here. The idea of vampires, of course, most people think of them coming from Transylvania. Explain this version of vampires. Ghanians have vampires in their mythology too.
Yeah. Yes, and I thought it was so fun getting to do like a creature, like we all know like the Dracula, like the Eastern European accent, Western style vampire, or even like the Twilight style, Edward Cullen. But it was so cool to do a creature. Most people understand the basics, like suck blood, like they're out at night, but get to do my culture's version of it and get to teach a little bit about the culture and like where we were coming from. And so with the idea, especially the firefly, because I'm like you, like, I used to catch fireflies with my friends, but because I heard the story that the fireflies were evil, I'd always be like, ooh, is this actually safe? Like, are they going to, like, actually hurt us? And so it was fun to take a symbol that here in America is something that's, like, fun and great for kids and, like, a little summer activity, and then show how in a different culture you take the same thing and it has a completely different meaning.
Exactly, because it was fun for, as a kid. That's what we did. We just used to... chase them around like crazy. Poor little things. I don't know. Now I look back and I think, oh, why? Oh.
I mean, they're probably vampires, so they're fine.
Oh, you yeah, thing, you know, now I can look and think about that, too, because I didn't know for sure, you know, was I being cruel? But now you're right. They could have been vampires, and I was saving my little town of Barraga, Michigan from vampires. Yes. So the Edge, which is spelled A-D-Z-E, but pronounced Edge.
Yes.
You know, when I was thinking about it, I like that. I thought it was a great name. I had never sort of seen that together. And as a matter of fact, you have a wonderful glossary of names and words at the end of the book. I think it's fantastic. One of the things I really like are the symbols. I thought they were so clever. And so these are real symbols from a real Ghanaian dictionary, right?
Yeah, so the symbols in the book are the Edding Cross symbols, and they are symbols that have been used through the Akan people of Ghana primarily. Each one has a different meaning, and they have a lot of them are tied to proverbs and sayings in my culture. And so those are symbols like I've known like my whole life. Like I think one of my first baby onesies had Sankofa. One of the symbols that means remembering the past was like one of my aunts like embroidered it on my first onesie. And so it's something that has a lot of significance and meaning to
my people. Love that. I love the Sankofa. It's so, when I looked at it and I saw it's a bird looking backwards with its head turned looking backwards. I thought that is such a beautiful symbol. I love it.
Yes, thank you. And so it was so cool because these, obviously, in our world, it has so much symbolic meaning so cool to put them in Sarwa's world and give them like literal power and like literal, because in the book, how she fights the vampires is she has to draw the symbols, and each symbol is a magic spell. So like Frankopat, for example, that one, because it's all about remembering the past, that one, when Sarwa draws it, becomes a memory spell. So it's like that.
Well, I think they're so clever, and I was so happy that you included them. And again, you know, I'm always thinking marketing. I don't know if you have a series of T-shirts, but these would be just wonderful, wonderful for a T-shirt, you know, to promote your books, to promote your writing, because I think they're just lovely.
Yeah, definitely. That's something lots of people, and I think lots of fashion designers in Ghana already use the symbols a lot in the art and like in the clothing. So those definitely exist. I don't know. I'm not a good artist, so I don't know if anyone would want my versions on their clothes.
But it's fantastic, and I love that you have that. And I'm sure a lot of kids will be, you know, the thing is, this book is written for what age? It's middle grade.
Ideal age is like 8 to 12, but, like, I've had, like, adults and, like, teenagers who've already read it, and they're like, I loved this book. So I like to say, for kids and the kids at heart.
Exactly. Well, I think I can definitely see that a lot of teenagers would love this book. It is it's very well written. Of course, you are a journalist, so your background is journalism, so you're a great writer. You've learned how to write properly. When you got the idea of vampires, so did you, like, go back and just check the sort of known version, like Bram Stoker's Vampire. Did you read any of those books when you were in college?
So I didn't do as much research into the Western one, besides like what I kind of already knew, because I knew I wanted these to feel different, and I really wanted to take from like my cultures. I did a lot of research into the Ghanaian version, the Ajay, and the different sort of belief systems there, but that's just because I really wanted to feel sort of unique to the culture, and I didn't want it to feel too much like Dracula.
Yeah, well, I think I like your version better, to tell you the truth. I like it much better. I've never been really fond of the regular version, but I found this much more, well, just fun and amusing in some ways, and I think you had fun with this writing. Obviously, you're a good writer. One of the things NaNoWriMo is coming up, and a lot of people are going to, I hope, will join in that whole idea of writing a book in 1 month, just to start writing. And a lot of people who listen to the program during the pandemic, they started writing. And I always tell the ask, what should I do to become a good writer? And I say, read. For goodness sakes, you have to read more. So tell us a little bit about your reading background. When did you start reading, and what books really influenced you?
Ooh, so I remember the exact moment I started reading. So we had been in America for like a couple years, so it's like second grade or so. And even though we've been here a few years, like I still could not speak English, and my teachers were like threatening to hold me back. So it was really bad. And I remember we were at BJ's, and there was this like table full of like stuffed animals, and there was a stuffed dog I really wanted. And so I was telling my mom our native language. I was like, Mom, buy me the dog. And she was like, okay, how about this? If you go to the book table and you pick up one book and read it all the way through in English and then tell me what it's about, next time we come back to BJ's, I'll buy you the dog. So being like 8 years old, I was like, okay, Mom. And I stormed over to the book table, and the book I picked up was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Oh, boy.
And at that point, yeah, I read that book, and I was just hooked, like, for what it was at the time and what it did for kids at that time. Like, this idea you can put words on a page and, like, suddenly, like, you can have it in your mind. And so after that, I had not read a whole book all the way through, but after that, I was just picking up everything I could read. I went from, like, bottom of the class to, like, top in reading scores. And do you know, Patsy, I never actually got that stuffed dog from my mom. And I've told her about that. And she's like, but you got something so much better. And I've been like, no, you owe me a dog. So we're still trying to get that figured out. But that was really that moment that it opened my eyes, and this idea that, like, reading can be a form of connection and community.
I love your mom. I love her. She is fantastic. What a wonderful mom. This is so inspiring, and it's a good lesson for all mothers out there. It's something so simple as that. It's just giving a challenge to a kid and making it something fun and how you're going to hold it over her for all these years. But it's you know, she must be so thrilled with what you've done with your life.
No, my mom, she is the absolute best. And while she still does owe me that stuffed dog, I have so much to thank for her and my aunts and, like, my family for making sure, number one, fostering that love of reading and also making sure I stayed connected to my culture in Ghana and felt so much pride in where I came from, even as I was growing up in America.
Well, you're very lucky. I mean, that is a beautiful story. So when you got to college, then what books influenced you in college? What type of reading did you do in college?
So I love YA. I really love YA a lot. So some of my big influences when I was in college, and Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir was one of my favorites. And this one's not YA, but The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin, which I think one of the best fantasy books of all time. Like, she does things there with words I didn't know were possible. And another one I love, Edward Stantikap, Click Crack, which is a short story collection, about Haitian girls and, like, growing up in Haiti. And those are just some things that really influenced me into loving, like, these works that's so deep and immersive, like it feels like you're inside a whole new world.
Well, when you were starting off, and obviously you picked journalism, did you find the real joy of learning new words, learning how to use words properly, and how to really make it expressive, your writing expressive, and painting a picture the way you do?
Yeah, definitely. I think the best thing about learning sort of journalistic writing before I got into creative writing was really understanding, like in an article, you only have like 500 words, maybe if you're lucky. Like, and so the important thing our teachers would drill into us is like, what is most important has to come out first. Like, there's no room for like extra flowery lines, no room for error, right? So it really taught me to parse out like, what matters to the story? Like, what do I need the reader to take away from if they have 5 seconds to skim this article? And so that sort of style of thinking of what is most important, what needs to make on the page, has actually been really helpful as a transition to novel writing. So even though I do have a lot more room, I still find myself prioritizing, like, because we've all read those books that are like 1,000 pages long and it's like 800 chapters of just descriptions of food. And like, I love a food description, but sometimes it's too much, you know? So I feel like it really helped me learn like what is most important for the reader to know and to really put the biggest emotions, the best characters, like, on the page as quickly as possible.
Well, you certainly have learned it. Really, it's fantastic. This, of course, is book one, and I'm sure you're planning a whole series of them, right?
Yes, I'm currently working on book two.
Okay. Well, Roseanne, your name is Roseanne Brown, so I want to tell people that they have to look for your website. It's Roseanne with a A-N-N-E at the end. But once they get there, they'll find out more about you. So, Roseanne, I would just want to tell people, go ahead and have a look at Roseanne Brown's website. Go to, the book is available, Sirwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting. It's a beautiful book. It's available online. And, of course, you are a New York Times bestselling author already. And you're going to stay up there, I think. with this new series, and I know you're going to have lots of fun with it. And again, always, I want to thank Rick Riordan always for what he's done for children and getting them to read. And now that you're part of the whole gang of his people, I think you've just done a beautiful job here, and I'm very happy that you were on Joy on Paper today, Rosie. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the best thing, tell all the young people out there, read a book.
Yes. And if you offer a stuffed animal, they might read it faster.
That's it. And a special hello to your mom, because I think that's so clever of her. That simple little idea, look what it led to. I mean, to having a daughter who's a New York Times best-selling author. That's pretty good.
Yep, she played the long game. It worked out.
Okay, and I assume you're also on Facebook and Instagram, etc., right?
Yes, my handle there on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is at Rosie's Rambles. That's R-O-S-I-E-S, Rambles, like the word.
Okay, at Rosie Rambles. That's good. Okay, everybody, check out Rosie. She's fantastic. I think you're delightful. And it's been a joy to talk to you today.
Thank you so much, Patsy. You have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too. Okay, bye-bye now. That's nice.
Bye.
Bye. She's so sweet. She's so sweet. And I like when authors put a glossary, and she has a lovely glossary with the explaining the words. And I love that she has these symbols in the back. I spent like half an hour just looking at the symbols, and I've actually written out a few because I think they're so very, very clever. And I didn't realize, of course, Ghana is a very interesting country. It is, for those of you who don't know, it is on the west coast of Africa, and you should know something about it. You can check that out too. But definitely the Adinkra, it's called Adinkra language, their symbols are so interesting, absolutely fantastic. So I want to thank again Rick Riordan for sending Rosie to Joy on Paper, because she is a joy. And okay, coming up, I want to remind everyone that October 25th is Carol J. Perry Day, and she's going to be on the program, and I am looking forward to that because she has a new book coming out on the 25th, and it's called High Spirits, and you can pre-order it now. She's getting a lot of coverage because it's a great book, and I hope that you will get it. It's one of her Haunted Haven Mysteries, book number 2, and you will enjoy it and pre-order it now. And then on October 25th, join me here on Joy on Paper. She's going to come into the studio because she was my very, very first in-studio guest almost 8 years ago. I cannot believe it. And I was so honored then when she came in, and I'm going to be so honored on the 25th. And then on the 27th, it's going to be Jack Reacher Day, because the new Jack Reacher is coming out. So that's also exciting, and I'm looking forward to that. And both Lee Child and his brother, Andrew Child, I never know what to call him now, but either name, I call him Drew, and he will be on the program, and they will talk about the new book, and we'll also talk about our memories of England, because we were both in England. I was in England at sort of the same time they were, and I visited many of the places where they visited, and even the same pubs. So I'm looking forward to that show. And then I just want to say hello again to, Bobby is in the studio today, and I always, Bobby is so sweet. He's such a doll, and it's always so much fun. I'm looking across, through the glass at him, and it's always so nice to see his sweet smile. So
good to be with you too, Patsy.
Okay, thank you, Bobby. And then I'll just say my ending here, because I just want to remind everyone that one of the greatest things in life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I've already said something nice to it's when I look at him, it's just, he's such a doll. We should have a picture of him, because Bobby is so sweet, and I am so happy that he was, able to come in today to help out Big Ed. Anyway, Big Ed's not here right now, but I'm saluting him in my heart all the time, because I love Big Ed, and I want to thank everybody for sending me recently some nice messages on my email about Big Ed and how I salute him all the time. Anyway, everybody, have a great day. Bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.